Thank you very much.
First, I want to greet everyone's greetings from the members of our class who are in Florida, because we have many seats here that are not filled with our usual members, and
they're all there on Wednesday.
Yeah, they're enjoying the Florida sun and the fire.
From what I understand, 54 degrees is hot, is the high there at the moment.
No, it was in the 60s.
Oh, I was going to say it was
a heat wave.
Israel is very warm. I just spoke with my daughter. It's summer, summertime. Yeah, very disgusted. No rain.
We hope we'll still get rain. I want to add my thank yous to you, Miriam, for stepping into the fore really at the last moment, and we're truly grateful to you. And I'd also like to apologize in advance. I have a 1:30 flight out of Newark. So at 10:45, in the middle of a sentence or not in the middle of a sentence, I'm going to have to say goodbye to everyone. Let's focus. Did you have a chance to do any of the readings?
Yes.
Yes? Some people did, some people didn't. Great. Here's what I'd like to do today. Today is going to be the last day in which you are going to hear me defending those who are prepared, to defend Satan against the oath. This is the last day in which I will be taking the position against the oath. So if there's anyone who's uncomfortable, please know I'm uncomfortable with that also. But I feel in order to learn, and certainly in order to learn the structure of the book, we've got to know what's going on. If you look at the chart that I prepared for you, you'll see that I summarized the arguments. We're going to read, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to read some of the arguments inside. We began the arguments last time. The arguments in Hebrew are called the Ma'anot. We began the Ma'anot last time. We're going to continue with the cycle of Ma'anot this time. I think what we'll do is we'll first read here, because it will be easy for you to grasp. I don't have any of the Yo's responses here. I just have the friends. What we should be doing right now is looking at the development from the first cycle to the second cycle. You know, you remember I had told you that after the initial narrative, you have several cycles of debate. Eov speaks, and then begin the ma'anot of the friends, and each time one of the friends speaks, Eov responds. You don't have any of Eov's responses here. Eov has three friends, and then there's a fourth individual, Elihu, that we're going to have to speak about next time. So I have the summary, and you can see already in the summary that two of the friends go through three cycles. One of the friends, as I would say, has the decency to stop that for the second cycle. But you know that I am a great friend of Rio, and today we're following another. Today we're following another line. So let's look at the Ma'anot, and I'd like to summarize them, and then we'll look inside, because this will make it easier for us to read.
Hannah,
where's Ma'anot?
I'm sorry.
Pardon me?
Where's Ma'anot? Where's that word from?
The word comes from
Ma'anit. Ma'anit, to answer.
Each time you have a Ma'ane introduced, it's Vayan. Vayan and Fazakimani. Vayan bin Zakashukis. So in the first cycle, we read this last time. I've summarized here the main points of two chapters, and there are basically two points here. Eliphaz says in the first cycle, "Zachar na mihu naki avad, ha'enosh me'aloh ha'yitzdak imei otseku yitar gavet, hine yashrei enosh yofi chenu eloha umusa shaday al timas, ki hu yach'ir v'yachvash, yimchatz v'yadav terpeh." וידעת כי שלום אהליך, וידעת כי רב זרעך, וצאצאיך כעשב הארץ. Remember, who is righteous and lost? In other words, if you're lost, meaning the key avad, if you are obeyed, then obviously you're not righteous. Is man more righteous than God? Ha'enosh me'eloh ha'yitzdach, more pure than his maker? Happy is the man whom God rebukes. Do not disdain the reproof of God. For he inflicts pain, but he dresses the wound. He crushes, but his hands heal. You shall know that your tent is in peace, your seed plentiful like the grass of the earth. Can you sum up for me what Eliphaz has said to Eeyore?
God knows best. If you're being punished, then there's that clearly, if you're in this state, you can't be righteous.
You can't be righteous. Man cannot be more righteous than God. Enosh me Eloha Yitzhak. You may remember from last time that this is presented by Elihu as a prophetic statement. He was overcome by a vision in the night, and the vision in the night told him, Ha'enosh me Eloha Yitzhak. The prophetic word told him, man cannot be more righteous than God. And he says on his own, Zachor mihu neki avad, a righteous person cannot be lost. But he also ends with something. And what does he end with?
He will heal.
You will heal. He ends with, you will heal. Now you're going to see a process. But I want to look below at Bildad. Look at Bildad's first speech. He says, Ha'el ye'aveit mishpat, im banecha chat'ulo, v'yishalchein biyad kishat, im zach v'yasharata, he says, does God pervert justice? If your sons sinned against him, God delivered them into the hands of their sin. If you are pure and righteous, your beginnings were pained, but your end will flourish greatly. So, what does he have to say? He's adding, how is what he is saying different from what Eliphaz is saying, and how is it similar?
I think what Eliphaz is saying is, even if you don't see where you sinned, man in general can't be that perfect.
Right.
So God is reproving you, but he will heal you.
Right.
And it's the nature of man that even if you strive for perfection, you can't help but sinning.
And
whereas Bildad is saying directly, look what bad people your sons were. They deserve it.
No, he's saying you might not have known that they were bad. You didn't know what God knows, because God is always just.
Yes.
You're progressing.
He's wording things delicately. He's saying, in banecha chat'ulo, if your sons sin, then God dispatched them. But you're going to see a progress. We're going to go through all of the ma'anot, in an overview, and you're going to see a process. And he's still maintaining the similarity with Eliphaz, in that his statements are gentle. He's saying, God doesn't pervert justice. If your sons sinned, they were punished. And he says the same thing, the same message as Eliphaz does, you will heal. You will heal.
But
yes.
He doesn't say your sons will heal because they're dead.
Correct. Two names in the last class, but he says, you will heal. If your beginnings were pained, your ends will flourish greatly.
No, but what Bildad is saying is that if you're righteous today, since you can't be perfect, you must have not been righteous before.
Oh, the implication is very clear.
Right, mm-hmm. But Eliphaz is much more pessimistic, and it's like it's impossible for you to be righteous today because you can never be fully righteous. So you must have sinned today along with your righteousness. That I find Eliphaz is very not just pessimistic, it's almost apocalyptic. It's you know, the end is always coming because you can never be pure.
That's interesting.
Happy is the man whom God rebukes. Do not despair. I mean, you should be happy in this because it can only get better. And but it's, I don't know. I find the first one extremely harsh. I don't know.
No, you should be happy that God rebukes because then you can improve. That God is paying
right,
attention
you can always
to what
improve.
You're doing.
Right. There's the except no, you'll never get there.
I don't get that. Okay. I don't know about the you'll ever get there.
No, when he says Ha'enosh me'eloha yitzach, he means you have spoken out against God. You have said in your first speech, I curse the day upon which I was conceived, the night in which I was conceived, I curse the day upon which I was born. Why did God let me come into this earth? The only hope for me is to pass on, and then in the grave all are equal. That's what Eyob has said. And Elihu is responding to that and saying, I can still maintain, despite what has happened to you, I can still maintain my thesis. Uh-huh. That the righteous are rewarded. A righteous person is not lost. Zachor mihu naki avad, and ha'enosh me'aloha yitzdak. You're accusing God, and I'm telling you, man cannot be
your
more righteous than God.
Perfect, but your children will be better. I mean, at the end.
Your seeds will be plentiful like the grass of the earth. Now, I want us to look at this, but we're going to see things inside. Look at the third speech, that of Tzofar. Tzofar says, "Im avin biyadcha harchikehu va'al tashkein bo'alecha avla uvatachta ki yesh tikva v'chafarta lavetach tishkav. If sin is in your hand, cast it away. And you will have faith, for there is hope, and you will sleep securely." So you see, there's commonality of all of the first cycle. And the commonality is that people are ready to recognize that there is a sin on Eyob's part, but that there is hope. There is a sin, and there is hope. Mm-hmm. Turn over for just one moment to the second paragraph, Ramban, in his commentary on Eyob. Ramban brings us the Gemara that we started out with, talking about the authorship of Eyob, and he maintains that Eyob was authored by Moshe. And that Eyob is a book that was revealed to Moshe. In other words, it was authored by God and written down by Moshe. And he says as follows, "There is a matter that pains the heart and weighs heavily upon the mind. And from this alone, many people in all generations were drawn to heresy, seeing in the world distorted justice, the righteous who suffer and the wicked who thrive." That's the source of heresy. "People are divided between two opinions, those who deny God's providence, hashkacha, and not his knowledge, and those who deny his knowledge and say that he doesn't know lowly individuals. These are two heresies." How do you deal with the fact that there is iniquity in the world, or inequity in the world? So there are those who say that God isn't involved in the world, and there are those who say that God doesn't know about the inequity, that God is... God does as best as he can under the circumstances. "There is a view amongst our rabbis that Moshe Rabbeinu authored Eyob, that the Almighty told him the tale of that man and those friends, just as he told him the book of Bereishit. In other words, this is a revealed book. And that he, Moshe, was commanded to write it, since it is the essence of faith and the foundation of the Torah. The friends who said suffering comes from sin, it is true. And in tractate Pe'ah, they said, the rabbis said, if there is a majority of meritorious deeds and a minority of sins, he is punished in this world," he means a person, not Eyob, mm-hmm. "he is punished in this world for the minority of his sins in order to fully reward him in the next world. But Eyob, who knew the absolute righteousness of his soul, this did not apply to him." So what does Ramban say? This book is at the epicenter of Jewish theology because it deals with those subjects which normally cause people to veer away from religion, and that's that they don't see justice within the world. And people either deny God's providence or they deny God's knowledge of the world. And Ramban says that's why these arguments are so very important. They represent different theological positions. And he says, is Ramban accepting the position of Eov's friends?
No. He said they had a point, because in Peah it talks about the fact that if you sinned, you might be punished in this world. But in fact, this didn't apply to Eov.
Right. So he's accepting their theological positions, and he's saying that
they're wrong. I mean,
they're wrong regarding Eov, but their positions are correct.
He's not giving us an answer for you yet.
He isn't giving us an answer.
Right.
Good.
He isn't
giving us an answer for Eov. He's presented the problem, but he has not explained to us why Eov exists.
Correct.
He didn't sin.
Correct. Since Eov did not sin, we don't know why Eov is suffering. The friends are correct that suffering is related to sin. Sometimes righteous people suffer in this world so that God can clean the slate and admit them to the next world with a clean slate. But that doesn't apply to Eov, and by saying it doesn't apply to Eov, you're saying it doesn't apply to many others. That position is correct up to a point, and it certainly doesn't justify Eov. Now let's look at the second cycle. Look at
what's the point of them saying all these things if they're trying to comfort Eov, and these things don't apply to him anyway?
Well, they don't know it doesn't apply to him.
It was their first shot, their first guess.
I don't know if any of you have had the experience that I've had, but I recall once someone giving me a lecture about one of my children and my parenting skills, or the absence thereof. And this person was convinced that my child would behave otherwise if I were a better parent. Mm. And the only way I could extricate myself from that situation, this occurs with parents, but it occurs with next door neighbors, it occurs with anyone. Your neighbor is behaving thus because this is the way you're treating them, and if you treated them differently, this isn't how they would behave. The only way I could extricate myself from the situation would be to explain, no, there's something wrong with my child. I'm fine. So that's what I'm going to say. Once the child grows up and the child is okay, you can say that. But when the child is young and you don't know what's going to happen to that child, you're going to say, I'm 100%. Can't say that. So you have this self-righteous person who's absolutely convinced that they know the answers. Why are they saying this in order to comfort Eov? Are they trying to comfort Eov?
They're trying to comfort themselves.
They're trying to convince themselves
that if you're right, change their view of the world and the way they understand it.
Yeah, because Eov's suffering is challenging them.
But their whole view, their whole world view would be threatened.
Listen, last week I paid a shivakal upon to someone whose mother had died, and this person whose mother passed away is a woman in her 50s who is unfortunate in many ways. So I asked someone, are you going to pay a shivakal? Do you want to come together with me? And this person turned me down and said, it hurts too much to see. Eov's friends don't want to see suffering. I think we see that all the time. Mm-hmm. We see people who don't have the courage to look a handicapped person in the eye. They'll be ready to give them, they'll give them the dollar, but they're not ready to say good morning as they pass the person who's sitting on the sidewalk. You see this more in Israel, I guess, than in the United States. You see people who are handicapped or one way or another out there in the street. And I always tell my students, when you give someone, you may be giving them a half shekel, you may be giving them whatever you can give them, but say good morning, say how are you. Talk to the person for a moment. Stop, look at them. And most of us have the tendency to wish to go on. I certainly have that tendency not to wish to stop, because you don't want to confront something which is going to cause you pain, you're going to identify with this person's suffering, you're going to feel bad for them.
But then you have an assumption that everybody in pain will react to the same comfort in the same way. And that's the person who's suffering. Some people who are suffering want comfort. Some people who are suffering want to be left alone, to fit with their thoughts and to come to terms with it. Not everybody, just like not everybody can comfort the same way, and different people will say different things. The people receiving the comfort also want it in a different, or need it in a different way. Not everybody reacts the same way. So it's, I mean, if you look at Holocaust survivors, some who came out more religious and some who came out less religious, people find comfort in different ways. I mean, you're taking the human psyche out of saying that there's a right answer. There isn't always a right answer. It depends on the person.
Do you think that everyone doesn't want to vote for themselves?
No, I'm not talking about your example of people.
But you're talking about
you. I'm just talking about, right, the process of being kind to people. Kindness can take many, many forms, and sometimes, even to the extreme of sometimes it's kind not to interfere.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes it's too much, and some people
yes.
don't want so much.
Yes,
you're right. But that's the extreme. But then there's a whole level back to where there's nothing. So there's
yes.
too much to nothing, and just as many variations on the comfort and giving hope is the same variation of the people receiving it.
Yes.
So you can't take the personality and the psyche out
mm-hmm.
of.
Okay.
I mean, you know, following what you said, you would imagine looking at some of these last answers that, you know, really didn't want to hear any of this.
Right.
It's crossed the line as to
yeah.
what you might have done this really.
The question is, they turn to Eover, turn to themselves. That's all.
Right. Yes.
Well, they're trying to give up. Yeah, people are always talking
yes.
to the person they're offering the
right. Yes.
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 In their own way.
Mm-hmm. They're convinced that if he'll only understand the system, he'll feel comfortable about being smitten. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One difference that I've noticed, I don't know if it's in the Sofar's perspective, but between Eliphaz and Bildad, is that Eliphaz's perspective, as someone mentioned, is very pessimistic. He takes the whole person and he says, there must be a sin, and so it's ki'ilu, it's like they're not, it's like they're all sin. It's like there must be one sin, and so we're going to take that lack, that 2% that's the lacking, and we're going to say, okay, you're zero. It's like all or none. And Bildad is the opposite perspective. I feel like he has a perspective of, okay, you're 95%, you're 98%. Let's take the 98%. You're not all the way there, but let's recognize the fact that you're 98%, and let's praise that, and not discount all of everything that you hold, you know, the entirety of who you are, just because there's 2% that is not yet there.
Bildad is more ready to. Bildad is not attacking Eov. Eliphaz is attacking Eov. Bildad is saying, if your sons were not righteous, well, they have done away with. Now look at the next cycle. Look at the second cycle. Yes.
Isn't that going back to what you said about your neighbor or whoever it was attacking your children? I mean.
No, the neighbor was attacking me.
Well, attacking you. What comfort is it to him to say, "Well, you'll get better, but your sons are garbage, and you know they're gone."
Well, the neighbor wanted me. The neighbor wanted me to change my child.
But what worse shiva can you go to than a somebody who's lost a child?
Mm-hmm. Remember that when you're dealing with Yov, you're not just dealing with suffering, you're dealing with an individual who feels, just as Yirmiyahu did, that God's arrows are being shot at him. He feels himself targeted by God for suffering, and therefore he doesn't have the sympathetic accompaniment of God. There's a passage in which Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about the song Dudala of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchev. And the song says, God is here, God is there, wherever I go, God is. And Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about how man can get through life by feeling God is with him. And the problem of Yov is that Yov feels God is against him.
Mm-hmm.
So that.
Not incorrectly.
not incorrectly. Yeah, correct. Now let's look at the second cycle. The second cycle is Eliphaz. Hamaat minifat hanchumot en ma'i kachacha libcha ki tashu el er muchacha v'hotzeita mitpicha milim ma'i noshki yizkeh v'chi yitzdak ilu isha af ki nit'av v'ne'elach ish shotek ma'i mavla. Are the consolations of God too small for you that you turn your spirit against God and let such words come out of your mouth? What is man that he should be pronounced righteous and that one born of a woman should be correct? All the more is the man who drinks evil like water, abominable and filthy. So there's a hint that who is this man who's drinking evil like water? He hasn't said it directly, but he's saying, man cannot be pronounced righteous. Even the most righteous man cannot be pronounced righteous. How much more so a man who is drinking evil like water? Give me a minute to go through Bildad and Sofar, and then I want to get to Eliphaz in the third cycle. Bildad says in the second cycle, Gam or sha'im gid'ach, saviv bi'atuhu balachot v'hefitzuhu l'raglav, yehetfuhu me'orel choshech u'mithevel y'miduhu, lo min v'lo nechet v'amo v'ein sarid v'mgorav, ach eina mishknot aval v'ze mekom lo yada'ev. The light of the wicked will die, terrors will overwhelm him on every side and will entrap him at his feet. He shall have neither great-grandson nor grandson amongst his people, nor any remaining in his dwelling. Indeed, such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of one who doesn't know God. So Bildad's statement in the second cycle is very simple, and it's a continuation of the first cycle. What is Bildad saying? The wicked will be punished. So even if you look and you see the wicked thriving now, you should know that the wicked will be punished. That is the fate of all the wicked. And he's continuing his notion of God does not pervert justice. He had said in the first cycle that if your son sinned, they were punished, and there is hope for your end. And in the second cycle, he's saying the wicked will be punished. Look at the second statement of so far. Ki reninat reshaim mikarov v'simchat chaneifa deiraga lachmo b'meyav nehepach merorot ptanim b'kirbo. Lachmo b'meyav nehepach merorat ptanim b'kirbo. Chayim v'la v'yikienu v'yikienu mibitno yorishenu el rosh ptanim yinat. The song of the wicked is young. In other words, it's new. And the joy of evil, momentary. His food in his stomach, the evildoer, the Rasha who's busy consuming good food, what's going to happen to the food in his stomach? You think that he's savoring life, his food in his stomach will be turned into the poison of vipers. He devoured riches, but will vomit them up. He will suckle the poison of vipers. You know, after one throws up, one is thirsty. So what happens? He's going to need liquid. And what's he going to do? That liquid will be the poison of vipers that he's suckling. For he crushed and forsook the poor. He stole a home and didn't build it up. And he shall not build it up. The heavens will reveal his sin, and the earth will rise up against him. This is the portion of a wicked man from God. Now, if you look at the second cycle, you see the second cycle is already different from the first. How is it different? It's more accusatory.
This is striking me as very simplistic in terms of, it can't, I mean, these are very smart men, it sounds to me. It can't be that they really, really think that bad things only happen to bad people.
Did you ever hear of cognitive dissonance?
Yes. Yes, and this is it.
You have what?
Cognitive dissonance is when you adjust your... when you adjust your ideology to the lifestyle you have chosen.
But it's very, it's simplistic is probably not the. It's self-fulfilling, meaning.
Wait.
It's making them feel better, but it can't be that they really thought.
You have Chamisha Kum Shaitan, which goes on and on and on. If you're good, you get rain. If you're no good, you get drought. If you do this, things will happen and they're good. If you're no good, you're going to get punished. This goes on through most of, Shmod, Vayera,
Right, but to lay this on Io, where there's no evidence.
You shouldn't lay it on Io, but it's you have this whole sort of reward and punishment going on throughout.
Right, but they're saying. In
that's
theory,
why.
But
so let me just add a postscript to Sharon. That's why this book is ultimately so courageous. That's why this book is extraordinary, because
this
book
turns the whole thing on its head.
This book is going to look at biblical ethics and not ethics, but this book is going to look at the biblical notions of promise and reward, and it's going to say. That's
not
the way life plays itself out.
No, it sounds like what they're saying is they only believe in promise and reward.
Yes.
And if you don't see it, you're just missing it.
Right. But when I say this,
it's your great-great-grandchildren
or your great-great-grandfather.
Right.
This book is going to renounce these opinions.
That's where we're headed.
The book is not accepting these opinions. And that's why this book is so extraordinary, and that's why the assertion that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this book is unbelievable. Because if you read this book to the end, you have to say that this book has a very different perspective than Chamisha Chumshei Torah. This isn't Kabbalah Tavicha Beti Mecha Lamadi Arikun Yamecha.
It's not only the Torah. I mean, you go to Shoftim, people sin. Plishtim come. The people get better, the Plishtim stay away. The people sin some more, the next guys come.
Uh-huh.
The people get better, they get a show. It's like, this is a constant theme.
Well, it's a paternalistic religion.
But, it's less about paternalism, but more about,
it's
black or white.
Be good, and you're rewarded.
Right.
It's very paternalistic. I mean, there's no reward in doing good for good. There's reward for the reward that if you're good, you'll be rewarded, not the other way around.
And this ultimately...
Good is the reward itself. You don't need the plishtim to stay away. Just live a good life. But that's... The religion is that way.
And
I don't mean paternalistic. It could be maternalistic.
You don't say
in
the Charles way.
I'm not saying in the Charles
way. It was in parental.
Parental.
I understood.
There's a Gemara at the end of Chulin that says, "Esker min haTorah minayin, Haman min haTorah minayin, Nachashverosh, Mordechai min haTorah minayin." At the very, very end of Chulin, it begins with a kind of a joke, a humorous letter, but then it shifts very quickly away from the humorous. And it wants to know how do we know that the characters of Megillat Esther from the Torah, and there's a hint for each person, and it continues with Moshe min haTorah minayin. How do we know that Esther is from the Torah? Well, there's pasuk Anochi Hasker Astir, I shall hide my face, and Esther represents the hidden face of God. And then you come to the same statement, the same Gemara. How do we know Moshe is from the Torah? And you say, so hey, what's going on here? Of course I know Moshe is from the Torah, because it says, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, God spoke to Moshe, how many times does it say in the Torah? And you realize that what that Gemara is seeking to do is to equate the Megillah with the Torah. In other words, it's raising Esther, Mordechai, Haman, the characters of the Megillah, to the level of the Torah. It's lowering Moshe to the level of the Megillah. Moshe is being put on the same level, and it's another way of saying, well, there's another system that has the same theological Sinaitic validity as the Torah does, and you'll see this system in Megillat Esther. And by saying that Moshe authored this book, which is one of the views, it's one of the views, not the view, it's one of the views of the Gemara, this is raising this book to Sinaitic validity. And you are absolutely correct that by renouncing these positions, we are saying there's a different perspective than perspective presented in the books of the other books of Tanakh. This is a totally different position. You know,
but that's your cognitive dissonance. You're justifying your behavior.
But this book is going to reject these people. In other words, tune in
right.
Next session, and you're going to see God rejecting these people. And it's very interesting because Rambam accepts.
But how could that be if there's the position that it's the Torah?
Well, Rambam. That's what makes it so interesting.
But you got to say that position can't be correct.
You've got to be at the end of the story.
But Rambam accepts the position of Eliphaz. Rambam says the friends represent different theological approaches. Eliphaz represents the Jewish approach. This is the approach of Chachamim. But Eliphaz had no business saying it. And Rambam brings the laws of Hona'ah, and I mentioned that last time, that Eliphaz's words, Zachor Mihu Naki Avad, is an example that Chazal give of afflicting another individual. You are not permitted to afflict another individual. If an individual is suffering, you're not permitted to pour salt on the wound, and that's called ona'a. So Rambam considers Eliphaz's words as correct, but what? He shouldn't have said it. He shouldn't have said it, but his words, the theology is correct. But I what does it mean? Chana doesn't agree with Rambam. I mean, so far I haven't agreed with him salvation. I haven't agreed with Rambam. So who am I not to agree with the giants? But I have to say I don't understand the position. And we get, and I think God is on Yov's part, put aside. And my proof of it is that in the Gemara, when we saw Satan speaking to God, remember, the Gemara made it into a conversation. If you go back to the first parak, Satan returns mishut ba'aretz u'hitalechta. Satan returns from traversing the land. And God says to Satan, have you found anyone as righteous as Iyov? In the Gemara, what does Satan answer?
Yes,
I have, and his name is Abraham Avinu. And if you turn over this page, I brought you a different variation on that same Gemara, because you often find the Midrash that comes in several different suits of clothing, stated by different people who share the same assumption. You'll see Rabbi Levi here has the same assumption. And the first Midrash here, the Gemara Bava Batra Tetzayin Amudarif, Amar Rabbi Levi, Satan ufnina l'shem shamayim nitkavnu. Satan and pnina intended for the sake of heaven. The very top. Satan, kevan dechaziyah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, denatei da'atei butar Iyov. When Satan saw that the Holy One, blessed be He, tended towards Iyov, Amar chas v'shalom, min shilei l'rachmanutei d'Avraham. He said, heaven forbid, God is forgetting his affection for Abraham. In other words, you have two types. You have Iyov and you have Abraham. And what distinguishes between the two? Iyov is what? Tam v'yashar v'yirei Elokim v'sar me'ar. Iyov is pure and righteous and fearful of God, and he distance himself from evil. And we said that you have that same description in the book of Bereishit of whom?
Noah.
Of Noah. And in the book of Yechezkel we saw that God, that Yechezkel says, if there were the following righteous people in the city, Noah, Daniel, and Iyov, they would not be able to save their children, they would just be able to save their sins. And then we said, what's being said? Who would be able to save his children? Abraham. So there is a position within Chazal that is a strongly entrenched position, and Rambam is definitely following that position, that there are two types. Noach and Iyov are individuals. We're putting Daniel aside for a moment. Noach and Iyov are individuals, and maybe we can include Daniel also, of perfect righteousness, of a character that's of unquestionable integrity. But what do they not do? What does Avraham Avinu do?
He spreads.
But not just that. Not just that. Think of Avraham and Avimelech. Avraham is never called a tzaddik tamim. It's unbelievable. The Torah never calls him a tzaddik tamim. The Torah calls him a what? A Navi. He Navi. Take a look at, for one moment, at Bereishit. 1 second. It's an unbelievable thing. Take a look at Bereishit. After Abimelech has taken Sarah, here, Bereishit chapter 20, Perek Tav, Pasuk Zayin. Bereishit chapter 20, Pasuk 7. Vata Hashem Eshet Haish Ki Navihu Yitpalel Ba'adcha Vechayeh. Now return the wife of the man because he is a prophet. And what does a prophet do? He prays for other people. Abraham is described as a prophet. Praying for other people is a theme in Abraham's life. Not giving up on other people, including on evildoers. What's Abraham supposed to pray for Abimelech? Abimelech just took his wife. If one has a moral compass, one should detest Abimelech. One should detest the people of Sodom. Because they're detestable. And what Abraham is going to pray because he's a Navi. He's going to pray because he's a Navi, and what does a Navi do? A Navi has a blind spot. He can't see that people are... He can't see that people have crossed the line and the situation is lost. He's going to pray for you.
There's always hope of redemption.
That's why the life of the Navi is so very difficult. You can think of Yirmiyahu going out, or Yeshayahu, and chastising people, or Yechezkel, but they're doing it because of a sense of faith in people. If you look at the life of Avraham Avinu, compare Noah and Avraham. You know what the dominant literary element of the book of Parashat Noah is? There's no dialogue. Noah never speaks to anyone. He's told the world is going to be destroyed. Vayas Noah v'chol asher tziva Hashem k'masa. Noah did as God commanded him. Think to yourself, through the book of Noah, through the parish of Noah, there's no dialogue. Even after his sons do whatever they do, his third son does what he does, you're told, Vayeda et asher asalom no, Noah knew what his son did to him. And then what does Noah say? Baruch Hashem v'yomen Noah, Baruch Hashem elokei Shem. Blessed is God, the God of Shem. He doesn't go to shame and say what? Well done. What does he do? He ponders shame and he says, shame is a righteous man, a godly man. Blessed is the God of shame. Yafdelokim liyefet v'yishkon ba'alei shame. And then he says, Arur Knan eved avadim yiyet lecha. Cursed is Knan, he will be a servant to his brothers. What does he not do? He doesn't go to Kabbalah and say, Kabbalah, how did you do this to me? You don't see any interaction with society. Whereas in the case of Abraham, think to yourself of Abraham's life. Whom does Abraham speak to?
Everybody.
Give me the examples of whom he speaks to from the beginning of the life of Abraham.
He speaks to the angels,
and he speaks to God without any temerity because he feels so passionate about the sense of right and wrong. God, how can you do this? Chas v'chalila, you can do this. He speaks to God. The angels are visitors to him. He speaks to strangers. You know, there are strangers who fled into the edge of his peripheral vision. And there are individuals with whom he expects to have no interaction with in the future. And what does he do? He runs out to greet them. There, I always say that when you're in an enclosed situation, we always speak to each other. You know, you're standing in line at the supermarket, mm-hmm. so the next person is equally impatient, you speak to them. You're sitting in the dentist's office, the next person has the same sense of foreboding, you speak to them.
Not in an elevator. Generally,
yeah. So you're saying that in a way, Eav and Noah are closely related in personalities.
Yeah. And saying that Chazal believed, and by putting Daniel in there, and everyone knows that Daniel is one of my favorite individuals within Tanakh, the same thing is being said of Daniel. Where's his interaction with the community? You're dealing with an individual of perfect righteousness, but where's his interaction with the community? What's he doing for people? Is Judaism just about Bein Adam LaMakom? Is Judaism just a religion about man and God? Or does Judaism...
What's the expression? A Jew isn't a Jew until he reaches out his hand to somebody.
To somebody, to another person.
But not only to another Jew.
To a human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think of Moshe Rabbeinu. Think of those three episodes, Vayidan Moshe Vayitze Yelechad, before Moshe could be appointed over to leadership. So what does he do? He goes out, and he's this person with a, you know, whose star is rising in the palace, and he goes out and he sees his brethren and he gets involved in justice. And that third incident, which is so marvelous, is he's fleeing. Rabban expands this. And this is, you know, this is part of Rabban's disaffection with Eov. Moshe flees to Midian. He knows that you're not rewarded for being a Boy Scout.
Injecting yourself into somebody else's problem.
Correct.
That's right.
You've done
it. Still
does
it.
You know, the first time he did it, he was naive. The second time he tries to do it, it's apparent that that person whom he saved betrayed him. What does he do? He goes to Midian. A person who's fleeing is intimidated. And what does Moshe do? Moshe is there again. They're not even Jews. What are you acting on their behalf? They're not Jews. Give up. They're goyim. You know, don't you know that a goy is a goy is a goy? And the answer is, well, if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't know that.
Right. And the midrash is that.
If you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you look at human beings. And if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, you just can't tolerate suffering, injustice to another human being. And where was Eov? What was Eov doing? What was Eov doing? So that brings us to Eliphaz. Mm-hmm. Look at Eliphaz. And actually, we're not getting as far as I had expected today, but it's fine because we're stopping at a good point. You look at Eliphaz in the third cycle. You notice that in the second cycle, people are no longer promising a good end. Right? In the first cycle, there was But by the time we get to the second cycle, by the time we get to the third cycle, look at the words of Eliphaz. Good.
Your wickedness is not.
This is taken from a chapter which is almost unbelievable. Your wickedness is great and your sins endless.
That's some comfort.
Now listen. He's ready to explain exactly what he did. You seized your brother's possessions for naught, and you stripped the naked of their clothing. Lo mayim ayef peshke. You didn't give the weary water. Umera'ev timna lechem. And you withheld bread from the poor. Ve'ish zra'alo ha'aret unesu palir yeshev ba. As a man of might who had the earth, and a respected man who dwelled there, almanot shilachta reikam. You sent widows away empty and broke the arms of orphans. Therefore, snares surround you and sudden dread terrifies you. How does Eliphaz know this all?
Yeah, where's it coming from?
Where's it coming from? He's telling Eov. He's telling Eov, I know that you stole money from helpless old ladies. I know that you inflicted wounds upon the sick. How does he know? Where does he know this?
Did he really? Maybe people are saying that. Maybe that's the word on the street.
Maybe well, it also back to the biblical books is saying this happened to you, so this is what you must have done wrong.
You don't know. Nobody knows what goes on in somebody else, and it's you got to make it make sense because you have to make the rest of your.
You have to make it make sense. You're going back. You're going back to the assumption that if evil has befallen you, there's a reason, and this is standing upon 2 feet. There's, as Sharon says, you're going back to the biblical books, and you're saying the equivalent of. Nar Hayiti, Begam Zakanti, and I remember what you said, Charlotte. Lo Hayiti, Tzadik, Ne'ezav, Zara'om, Vakesh, Lachem. There's no such thing as a Tzadik who is abandoned. So if you're abandoned, you're not a Tzadik.
So you back into it then. You must have done these bad things.
You must have done these bad things. Otherwise, evil would not have befallen you. So if you are thus suffering, It's not like within the first cycle, where within the first cycle, Eliphaz said rather gently, Zachar lihu naki, avad, and now shayaloha yitzad.
He really is getting carried away because there's one thing he's saying, you're suffering, I mean, something happened to you, you must have been, you know, you must have done something wrong. But there's a difference between saying you've done something wrong and saying
what he actually did, specifically, he's really like a fantasy.
So tell me just one thing, and I wish to end with this. According to Rambam's position, that Eliphaz is correct, how is Rambam going to understand Eliphaz saying that on the 17th of February 2010, you stole money from the poor? You inflicted wounds upon people. Get back to the approach of the Gemara that there are 2 personality types. There is the righteous Noah, Daniel, and Yov, and then there is Moshe. There was Abraham and Moshe. Moshe is introduced in the discussion by saying Moshe wrote Yov. You know, here let me end with this. I realize this right now. The Gemara juxtaposes Abraham with Noach, Daniel, and Eov. But by Rabbi Levi saying, Moshe wrote Eov, the Gemara is saying, Moshe and Abraham are together, and Noach, Daniel, and Eov are together. There are the 2...
outreach people.
Those people who will reach out to other human beings. You have Moshe, who is it? Moshe is a Navi. Moshe is a Navi. Moshe is never called a Tzaddik. He's called a Navi. And what has he spent his life doing? He spends his life fighting. He's always fighting. He's fighting injustice in Egypt. He's fighting...
The Jews in the desert.
He's fighting the Jews in the desert. He's fighting God. And he's fighting God. Boy, is the life of a Navi rough.
Not to go back to the psychological again, there's 2 types of people, there's the doers and there's the listeners. If you know, the people who listen and do everything are the people who are proactive about their lives, and both can be good.
I think what Eliphaz is saying is not that both could be good. You're saying both could be good.
I think Eliphaz had a tantrum. That's the way this is. Because he starts with, when you go to somebody, if you like look at the child again, you say, don't worry, everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be okay. And then the child or the person doesn't feel better. So then he says, well, you know, maybe you deserved it a little bit, but don't worry about it. And then he says, like, just
deal with it because you probably deserve it. It's like he got frustrated and angrier and angrier and angrier that why does EO need this? You know, but he started out nice and then he just said, come, deal with it, you deserve it.
But is it possible that what Eliphaz is saying is you could have saved people from suffering and you did not, and therefore their suffering is your responsibility.
Why is that cycle three and not cycle one?
You had the wherewithal.
I understand what you're saying. He's saying you don't like the passive. He doesn't like the passive person.
You, EO, who has rejected, you've rejected Ha'enosh Me'elo Ha'yitzak. You've rejected Zachar Mihu Naki Avad. So I'm going to tell you, and of course there's an escalation here. And I'm going to tell you that you had potential to change the world. You had the wherewithal to change the world. You had the wherewithal to stop suffering. And if you did not stop that suffering, and what were your sons doing?
Partying.
They were there, they were partying. Your sons were partying, and what weren't they doing? How can it be that the whole family is indifferent to the suffering in the society around them? And who is not indifferent to suffering in society around them?
So maybe if you're comparing Noah didn't have any big problems the way Eeyah did. He just took care of his family, he took care of everything, he went on his ark, and he was safe. And that was the end of that. He didn't suffer the way Eeyah suffered.
But he's giving more.
You're right, and this book is...
I'm not
reading
anything on it.
No. I have this plane to make, which is why I'm sitting at the edge of my chair. But... you're again bringing us back, Ellen, to the question of whether this book is a theoretical book or is not a theoretical book. Is there a historical Eov? Is there an Eov in every generation? And are we attempting to maintain the biblical message exactly by juxtaposing Moshe and Abraham? We may not be saying that the righteous live an easy life, but the message is a message of continuity, not a message of break with the books of the Torah. There is a message here of continuity that Moshe was a Navi, Abraham was a Navi. We don't usually think of Abraham as a Navi, but the Torah calls him a Navi. And the point is that these people are out there fighting the way the world is on every level possible, whereas Eov is righteous and Daniel is righteous and Noah is righteous. I leave you with this. I wish you all a joyous day. Per his name, Mishloach Manot, Matanot Lev Yonim, La Yudim Haita Simchar, Simcha is a Simcha, bringing everyone in. Thank you.
Have a safe day.